Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How are you doing, the Caramel Kid?
What? I'm good. Sean, what's going on? What's the white devil saying?
He's not saying a lot. He's out. It's sunny in Amsterdam this week, which is nice. I'm enjoying that. Back to London for a couple of days this week, which I'm not really looking forward to, just because I don't have to fly all the time. But hey, it's all right.
Nothing to do with coaching your celebrity.
Well, I can't mention this celebrity, have we, just yet, but we're going to be some coaching with some, a big celeb on the scene. So we're there. We'll reveal more details about that when it actually happens. So yeah, all good. Okay. But you just had your hair cut. Is it looking smooth?
Looking dapper on the bus, yeah?
Perfect. Lovely.
So get this, right?
Yeah.
I'm driving along. Yeah. Some old guy walking stick waiting at a bus stop.
Yeah.
So I'll pull in really, really close.
Yeah.
And he's obviously hobbling to get on.
Yeah.
And he's taking ages to get on. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then obviously more people are walking along to come to get on.
Yeah.
And then this like big gym bunny guy, you know, like a meathead.
Yeah.
Like he's wearing a string vest. He's got
we know the type, yeah.
Sports drink in his hand, yeah.
Yeah.
He sort of like steps around the old man and buzzes himself on, and people like give him like dirty looks, thinking, can't you just wait for the man to get on, yeah?
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, and obviously he was, you know, like so self-absorbed, he didn't see anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. So what he does, he tries to help the man, yeah?
Yeah.
And instead of like putting his hand out and letting it, he literally picks the man up under one arm, right? And lifts him on the bus, really? Right? Yeah. And then, obviously, driving along, they both get off at the same stop. He does, he sees the old man go and literally picks him up under his arm, like a pet. Walks off the bus, then puts him down. I just couldn't stop laughing.
We need more of that on TFL buses. That should be the new thing. Have a gym bunny at every stop to lift on the old people on and off.
Extra weight training.
Exactly, yeah. These gym bunnies need work, you know. They need jobs too. Yeah, let's get them on the buses. But hey. I went out for a haircut today too, and I was very frustrated because I cycle my bike, and I've lost my bank card. So Molly gave me my pocket money, €30.
€30 for a haircut?
Well, I had a little bit of extra cash in there, but she gave me €30 just to, you know, she's very nice to me, looks after me, my wife. And I lost it on the first corner. It must have come out of my pocket on my bike. So some tramp.
Yeah, go on.
So some tramp in Amsterdam now is having a good afternoon, getting really pissed up because I lost it on the in Vesterpark, which people don't know where that is, but it's a good little area for tramp to go and have a bit of a drink down there. So one of those tramps has had a lovely afternoon on my £30, and I've still got hair. I need my hair
so
cut.
So did you go into the barbers? Because you know when you go into the barbers?
Yeah.
You get your hair cut and pay after?
Yeah, oh no, I didn't do that. I got all stressed
out.
So
you're lucky.
Yeah.
You're lucky that did happen because you sit down, get your hair cut, and yeah. Then you can't pay.
Yeah, that would have been bad. And then you've got to brush up the hair for the rest of the week. They keep you prisoner.
You'll be selling bottom.
So yeah, that was annoying. So that put a downer on my day. I wasn't very happy about that, but other than that.
So,
yeah.
So it's your €30 daily allowance or weekly allowance?
it's the weekly. Yeah, I've got to keep myself in check. So yeah, very frustrating. But anyway, that was my day.
So what's today? What's the today's subject?
Well, I did the interview for today before we come up with the subject, letting you behind the curtain there. And we spoke to Emma Pallant. So those of you who don't know Emma, she is a top triathlete. But formerly, she was a really, really talented
GB runner, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. She was, I think, third in the world junior championships over either 1500 or 3K. I can't remember which one. But she talked a lot about when she was injured, how triathlon just came along because she needed a goal that kept her mind active and sort of took the attention away from needing to run, if you know what I mean. So she really wanted to run and race. She was really competitive. but in fact all running was doing to her was making her carry on this injury spell. So she needed time out, but she found it hard to take time out because she wanted to be competitive. So she did a triathlon just because it gave her a bit of a goal and a bit of focus. So we thought we'd have a chat about goals, how to set goals and why goals are important. So we thought that'd be quite a useful thing for people to talk about and listen to. So when you were at your peak, man, when you were running on the track and that sort of thing, when did you set goals? When did you think about putting them together?
So end of the season.
Yeah.
You sort of like set a goal for next year, what you want to do next year.
Yeah.
And then you sort of like say, okay, when's the qualifying, when to do that, and you work out what phase of training you need to do leading up to that, so you've got a long time.
Yeah. Okay.
Into it.
Yeah.
But then also you need to reevaluate at the beginning of the summer.
Yeah.
To say what races you're going to do and how your training's gone, because training might not have gone to plan.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's obviously elite level, but loads of people come up to me and obviously they know I'm running and they say, oh, I want to lose weight. Hmm. I want to, you know, like do something. They say, what can I do? You got to help me. You got to come running with me. And I was thinking, I can't come running with you because after 5 minutes, you want to start walking. So I just say to them, you need a goal. I said, why don't you aim for a fun run?
Yeah.
And then once you've got that target,
yeah,
work back from that target. So say it's 8 weeks away, then you can say, okay, I'll start off by doing one run a week. And like I said, once you've got that goal,
yeah,
it's easier to force yourself to get out to go training because you know you've committed to that goal.
Yeah, okay.
Because if you do nothing, you're going to like embarrass yourself. You're going to like, I mean, you die on your feet. So,
yeah,
you know, it forces you to get out.
Yeah.
So that's one way of like tricking yourself and forcing yourself to get out and do exercise.
Yeah.
So by setting a target.
Yeah. And did you, when you set your goals, did you tell everyone about them? Because that's something you often read, like, you know, you read these running articles and blogs, and it's like, they say, number one advice is like, write down your goals and then make them social so everybody knows you want to do it, because that then gives you more impetus to do it. Did you tell people about your goals when you set them?
Yeah, I wasn't top secret about my stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I told people, and the good thing, especially, like I said, at the live podcast,
yeah,
sometimes it works well when you tell people that are non-sports people.
Yeah.
Because they always ask you, oh, have you done that race? Oh, they know when it's coming up.
Yeah.
So when you do it, you don't just like cop out, oh, I'm going to drop out, or, you know, like,
yeah,
you got to like face the music to say, oh, it's good or bad. So yeah, sometimes it's good to obviously like tell everyone.
Yeah. Okay.
But then I know like some athletes, I know Andy Bradley.
Yeah.
He would never tell anyone about these races, and he just turn up and just do races and stuff. And obviously they like that because then obviously people can't work out what they're doing. But I was thinking that's just a bit extreme.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like,
what did you do? What did you do?
Do you know what? I was never like, looking back on my career, I never really had like a goal. Like, I want to finish in this place or run this time or do that. I just wanted to get better. Certainly when I was a junior, I just wanted to be competitive in each, almost like each level, get better and better. So like, I wanted to be competitive in my county. And when I was competitive, there wasn't like a hard and fast, I've got to run 19 minutes for this race, or I've got to do that. Because I think that was quite good then, because it wasn't like, if I didn't make it, if I didn't say on the 6th of September, you've got to run 9 minute 3K. And if you didn't have, those kind of goals are a bit like, if you didn't do it and you put them, or if you had it, it was too much pressure. So it was like, oh, I just want to be competitive. I want to race. I want to enjoy running against people, and I want to maybe beat this guy or that guy. And each time it improved. And actually, in my years when I was doing the best, what I like to do is I like to have a rival, right? Have I told you about this before? So like, I kind of
pick on someone.
I pick someone. So when I ran my very best year, I picked Nielsen Hall, right? So Nielsen Hall was the local guy at the Met League who used to win every time. So I just thought, right, I want to be competitive with Nielsen Hall. And actually, funnily enough, through the year, I got closer and closer to him until at the actual National Cross, he came third. And I was one behind him and I came fourth because I was always judging myself on Nielsen Hall. Now, that can be bad because if he has a bad race and I judge myself on him, I'll also have a bad race. But kind of having a rival and not sort of picking a time or a place for myself, but just thinking I want to be competitive with people who I think are good athletes, then that kind of helped me push on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think that works better like in the cross country situation because it's about placing rather times.
Yeah.
Because say like when we were younger, everyone knew if you finish in the top six, you'll get an England vest at the, you know, English schools and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the all almighty. You know, like to do that. And then the Euro trials, you obviously finish top four to get in GB vest, you know. So people, time pressure is one thing, but cross country placing is different.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like people like do put like especially with the marathon now. So I've done it to myself. So I've got this goal now to run 220 in Frankfurt. All right. So I'm really putting the pressure on. I'm trying to do all my sessions focused on that goal. And actually, do you know what? If I run 220 and 40 seconds, or I run 218, it's not really gonna change my life. Do you know what I mean? So having like really hard and fast marathon times it's good to base your training around and to focus on, but actually I don't know, that there's negatives.
But what about a rival? Have you got a rival? Who's your rival? Who did you pick up?
I haven't got a rival. There's a couple of guys from the British, there's the England team going to be out there, so I don't really know what shape they're in. So
next time I talk to you on Project 220 next week. I want to ask you a rival, so you need to tell me who your rival is.
Oh, hang on. I know Kev Quinn's doing it. I like Kev Quinn, but Kev Quinn's he's done 66 minutes at the Devil Weekend at Cardiff, so I think he's a little bit ahead of me. But you're going down, Kev Quinn. I'm taking it.
Okay, so he's your rival, yeah? Kev Quinn, yeah?
Yeah, well, he's the only person I could think of off the top of my head, but it should be funny. But yeah, there it is really important to have like a structure goal. And like you were saying, you should not only have a goal that you want, that ultimately you want to have, but also have a series of other goals leading up to it. So you said like you'd review it at the beginning of summer saying, right, my goal is eventually, I don't know, to finish in the top five in the trials, but I know my winter went badly because I had a couple of injuries. So now I'm going to think about trying to maybe peak a bit later in the season or change stuff around. So you've got to be adaptable in your goals to make them succeed.
Yeah. And then also it helps when you're injured because you do your rehab more religiously when you're injured. You're thinking about, okay, I want to not lose too much fitness, you know, like get ready for that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely good for focusing your energy in one direction, having a goal.
Yeah. And that's what really interesting about Emma's goals and how triathlon became a sub goal for her, because her main goal, running, wasn't working quite so well. So you've got to be adaptable, but always have something that you're aiming for. Don't just do things aimlessly. And it might just be to enjoy running more and to enjoy, like, and to become a better runner and to feel more comfortable and confident when you're running. But it's always important to have something that you're aiming and having a goal towards. So I reckon let Emma talk about her goals and how she's transitioning. Well, she's more than transitioned to triathlon. She's smashing it. But let's listen to her chat now. Here we go. So on this week's show, we're talking to Emma Pallant. How are you doing, Emma? All right?
Hello. Yes, I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. And you're over in Kona at the moment, getting ready for the triathlon.
Yes. It's 8:30 at night here. I think it's morning your time.
Yeah.
And yeah, getting ready for the big Ironman World Champs, which, it's come around really quickly.
Yeah. And what's the atmosphere like in Kona? Is it? It's just a bunch of triathletes descend on a little town and take the place over.
Yeah, it's really surreal. It's kind of you hear about it and you hear all the stories and everything, but once you hear it, it's nothing like what I imagined. It really is crazy. I mean, we're still 8 days out from the race, and already you just walk down the road and there's people biking and running, and it's just like a little triathlon mecca.
And are you, with 8 days left, are you still doing much training, or are you easing right back now?
Yeah, so I've got my last kind of, with the last real intense bike to run session this morning. And I'm swimming every day just because it's kind of my weak thing, and I need to keep a hand in the water. But I'll do my last long run a week before. So Saturday will be, my last bit of volume and just getting kind of adapted to the heat and practice taking on the right amount of fluid and stuff. And then, yeah, next week will be super, super chilled.
Yeah. And have you done much sort of heat acclimatization in training then?
Yeah. So it's quite close to the half Ironman World Champs, which was in South Africa last month. So I haven't done, I had 2 weeks training in Lanzarote. So that was, and the conditions there were actually really good. It was quite hot and really humid for them. So yeah, that was kind of my block between the two big races. So you got some really good work in, but yeah, perhaps not as much as big a camp that as I'd like to have done. But yeah. Yeah, it was good. We did well with the time that we had.
Yeah, fantastic. So, and actually, this is only your third Ironman attempt.
Yeah, so the first one was a bit crazy. I didn't finish. I didn't do the run. My back went, well, my calf went on the bike, and yeah, later we found it. I was riding. I kind of just assumed it was a really hot day, so I kind of just assumed it cramped, and yeah, I couldn't run on it. But then found out that yeah, it probably came from my back, because my back was out when I tried to rehab back running. So yeah, just too aggressive a position on the bike, which when you're running for 5 hours, it can have some big impact.
So having had that experience, having had the bike lift, and the second one you won, didn't you? Or you podiumed?
So Austria, again, it was definitely a learning experience. I was in the lead till I think about 5K to go. And I had just, on the marathon, I was just like, I wasn't really feeling hungry and I felt a bit sick. And I thought, I don't need to take my gels. I probably had like one gel at the start. And then I was like, I don't really need my nutrition. Like, I feel a bit funky. I took loads on the bike. I'm sure I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And yeah, then you start like, I think it was about 10K to go. I was like, oh man, feeling really dizzy. And then, yeah, I was doing like, geez, I'd hate to look at my splits. Probably like 5:30 Ks or something. Like, I barely made it to the finish. But yeah, I still came third. So that's what qualified me for here.
Oh, great. Because in that last... If you hit the marathon in front, do you back yourself? Are you a stronger runner, do you think, than a lot of other triathletes out there with your experience?
Yeah, so I think I came off the bike about, I want to say like maybe three minutes or something down. And yeah, for sure, like the run is my strength. So yeah, I was feeling like, geez, like 3 minutes is not that long, like equivalent to a half Ironman. You probably think like, yeah, that's like a minute and a half. In a half, which really isn't that far back at all.
So
I was kind of, it was a better position than I was expecting to be. So but the hilly bike courses kind of suit me a bit better as well. Yeah, Austria was a good one for that.
And what's, from those experiences, what have you had to change anything in your training? Like, have you had to look into your back a bit more, and have you had to make sure you practice your fueling better?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. For me, pacing and nutrition is kind of always the key. I still go out thinking like I'm a 5K, 10K runner. And I don't know. I just get in the zone and I know all, like I've got all my nutrition like planned out well in advance and I know what I should be taking. And sometimes I just get so caught up like, in the event I just run past the aid stations and stuff. But yeah, it's something that I think, so I had quite a nasty accident last year, kind of around December in Lanzarote, where again, I hadn't drunk enough. I did a really hard kind of treadmill session.
Yeah.
And then went out and it was a really hot day. I went out and went straight onto the bike. Again, I kind of felt, I feel a bit sick. I don't really want to eat or drink. What I was planning to have, did a really hard, like, climb up this one of the quite big hills, and then coming down on the descent I actually fainted off, like no. Thankfully I don't remember any of it, but yeah, that was kind of a warning of it's a bit more serious, like collapsing than just like fainting on the run. When you're going quite quickly on a descent and you faint on a bike, it was certainly a wake-up call, and yeah, I'm learning.
Yeah.
still got a bit of time to go. But and again, with my bike position, we've definitely changed that. So we brought the front bars up a little bit, and it's less aggressive. So less aero, but actually I can hold the position a lot longer. So I think long term, it's probably a better position.
And thinking about the why and how you started in the sport, what originally got you into running back in the day? What was the spark that got you doing endurance sports?
Yeah, I think it was just one of those things. So I was really hyperactive when I was younger, and I just wanted to do everything. And I was always like, be the last out, and like in the garden at home, my mum would be calling me in, and I just loved all sports. And then my coach Mick Woods, so Aldershot Farnham District, he first of all sort of saw me at just a local schools race, and he was like, "Oh, come along to the club." And then I loved running, like running. It was just you, and you were in control, and less of not like it wasn't that I didn't enjoy the team sports, like they were great too, but I just felt that. Yeah, everything that you put into your running, you always got out, and I just loved it, like the feeling of running. And he was like, "Listen, if you want to be," he said, "it's great you do everything, but if you actually want to be really good at one thing, then you have to commit to it and you have to put it first." And so that's what I decided to do with the running, and yeah, it kind of went from there.
Yeah, great.
I think, yeah.
And what about the other things in school? Were you good at? Was sport mainly your focus? And it sounds like you're doing a lot of different stuff. Did you manage to have any time for any other academic qualifications or anything like that? Or was it sport all the way?
Yeah. So I wouldn't say I was massively interested in school, but something like I like projects and stuff. And I was really, obviously from running, like you always see the injuries and things. And I was really interested in how the body worked. And my mum's a doctor. So first of all, I wanted to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And then I fainted at the sight of blood, so that didn't work out. And then I thought, okay, what's like a doctor but less bloody and more to do with sport? And so I did physio. So I qualified as a physio out of Brunel. And probably I worked, I think, I set up my own private practice, like worked alongside a gym.
Yeah.
And yeah, that went really well for probably about a year or a year and a half. And then when I decided to switch to triathlon, again, it's one of those things you kind of, if you're gonna do it, you have to go all in. Like the training is full on, 8 hours a day. And I made that commitment to do triathlon and stop the physio side of things.
Did you quickly get a pro contract then, or how did you go into it? What enabled you to do?
The first year, a lot was self-funded. So Nike contract from the running, they were good enough to flip over and support my first year of triathlon. And Barry Wells, he also helped. He was like a tri-gold. So I know he helped out with Trina Johnson-Thompson and Jess Ennis. And then he also had like a tri-gold scheme.
Yeah.
So it took people like Mark Buckingham and Adam Bowden did that kind of transfer from running to triathlon. So yeah, again, same thing. He taught me in that first year.
So going back to your running career, what were your, like, what made you, do you think, what was your strengths as a runner back then? And what distances did you mainly do? Were you mainly a track runner?
Probably started off mainly kind of the 1500 meter and 3K when 3K was a distance, so I kind of did those and then stepped up to the 5K. And I always loved I wasn't the biggest fan of the muddy or the cold cross countries, but I used to love the European type of things, like the hot black golf courses.
That was
my kind of cross country. So I'd say that. Yeah, that was probably the main distances. 800 meters is a bit quick for me, and we trained with Mick, so he was on like a real high volume, high mileage type training program.
Yeah, that's quite a difference though from doing 15.3 to then going and doing Ironman triathlon. It's quite a step. Did you be better at the longer stuff? Were you?
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is the thing. Like, so we used to do a Guernsey festival and the half marathon. I always used to love the road 10K.
Yeah.
And then we get to the half marathon, and yeah, that wouldn't be my most favorite one. But I don't know, there's something about Chapel, and I just, yeah, it's the real. I guess it's gone up so quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, from like a 4 minute event to a 9 hour event.
Yeah.
They are so different, but I've learned so much about nutrition. I'd say nutrition and pacing, I still have a lot to learn, but yeah, it's that's the main difference between the two events, I would say.
And what happened then? So what ended your running career? Why did you what do you look for this move to triathlon?
Yeah, so I in 2012, so I had a knee injury. I'd say it came after the world, I'm trying to think what year that would be, the world junior was third at the 1500s.
Mm.
Like a couple of months after that, I started getting this knee problem. I think it was the momentum of training. Like, I just wanted to keep on. Like, I was on such a high and everything was going so well. And just I kept on moving things forward, kept progressing the training. Again, the mileage crept up, and it was probably, yeah, it was, I'd say then for the next year or two, just on and off with constant knee injury. And I kind of knew better. So studying physiotherapy, I kind of knew like the warning signs and everything, but I swept them under the, I'd always be like, just that one next race, just that one next goal.
Yeah.
And then you'd do that. And yeah, basically I kept running through when I shouldn't have. I thought I was superwoman, and eventually I got to the point where only surgery would fix it. So that was on my patella tendon. I had some, knee surgery, and that pretty much wiped out a good couple of months of training. And then again, I think I just rehabbed too fast. I didn't change the way I was running and went back to too much mileage too quickly. And it was kind of on and off all that time till 2012. I'd have some good results, and then I'd be, back in the gym cross training. And in 2012, I just thought, I got to the trials for the 5K and same thing. Like I'd really pushed hard. I got fit. And then my knee had flared up again, and I just thought, okay, I'll just get through this race. And I was just running on the track, and I was in so much pain. I thought, why am I doing this? And I stepped off.
Yeah.
And, Kelly Holmes was there, and she was like, well, you've done all this cross training. Like, I just needed another goal, and I needed a reason not to be running for a bit to actually fix things.
Okay.
That's where the swimming and biking focus came in. And, she gave me a spot for the London Triathlon to race for a charity. So I did that off like zero running. And that's when the triathlon began.
Wow. So was your intention to come back to running then?
Big story. Yeah, definitely. There was kind of no question in my mind that I would definitely keep on doing the running races and that triathlon would be like a thing that would, bring me back to it. Just give me the patience and I just wanted a goal. I wanted a purpose to training. Like, it was all well and good getting fit and knowing I was fit. But then, when I had to keep on backing off the run races, I just wanted that competitive kind of exciting goal.
What about now then? If you thought about it now, would you want to go back to running now? Or you're perfectly happy in the scene you're in?
Yeah, it's so hard because like I love running. Like even now, like every time I've got my training kind of schedule and stuff, it will be the long runs. Like when we were in a hard block out in Spain, that Thursday afternoon. So my last session of a big week, because we always take Friday just as the swim yoga day. It would be a 2.5 hour run, and it's just the one that I would crave. Kind of that. I don't know, I don't get it from biking or swimming, the same feeling as running, but the event, kind of the whole thing of triathlon and the mass racing and just the enormity of it and the fact that you can train all day, that kind of, I just love it. I love the lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I think I'm always going to, it's hard because I kind of also love the running, but you can't really drop. I think you can be fit as a triathlete, but it's certainly very different. Like, I feel different to when I was a runner. So, but having said that, I've run some of my, so in my off seasons, like I did the Cabbage Patch last year, and ran my fastest time. So went back to that, and I ran my fastest half marathon. I went to Lanzarote last year as well. I did that half marathon race. I've actually got some of my fastest times over the longer stuff as a triathlete. So I'll always have that, like, where those couple of months a year where it's kind of downtime, I take to indulge myself in run races and run more running training.
Do you think you could ever do a marathon?
The total opposite to what I should be doing.
So a marathon might one day be on the cards.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think, again, when there's no kind of serious triathlon goal, or I can afford a little bit, like a couple of months to train up for a marathon, I would definitely. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Nice. And what's the difference in scene, if that makes a sense? Is it more like, because obviously the running scene, particularly kind of levels slightly below the top, you know, it's quite grassroots. It's quite, you know, the history and that sort of thing in running the local cross country races of old guys who, you know, used to run for Great Britain, sitting on the corners, directing people around. And it's very different, isn't it, the triathlon scene? What are the differences, do you think, between the two?
Yeah. So triathlon, there seems to be so much gadgets, the gadgets and the science behind, like the nutrition is like the fourth discipline. So, and yeah, just the gear needed for triathlon, even just like traveling, like having to travel your bike and stuff. So I think, it's a very, like, you wouldn't talk a lot with runners about like the different, like probably the main conversation, if you're going to talk about any equipment, you're going to ask someone what trainers they run in. That's kind of the end of conversation. Whereas you could sit for 5 hours at a coffee shop with a triathlete talking about watts and about, bike makes and the fastest aero helmet. And the, like, if you want it to be a geeky sport, it can be a real geeky sport. But at the same time, I just think it really attracts the people that love to push themselves and love to have that. You got to have the obsessive nature. I don't think you can do triathlon properly if you don't love it. Like, you have to love training. It's real kind of black and white, like give it everything or don't do it type people. I love that scene. There's less moderation, whereas like you say, with running you can get all types of runners. I think as well, with everyone having a different strength, so across the three disciplines, it kind of adds that dynamic of there's never a clear favorite. There's never a field where sometimes a running race can be a bit more predictable. The triathlon dynamics, I think you get so many more, wild cards, and it's definitely a spicy sport.
And in the races, so previously, 1500 metres, very tactical race. You had to know where you were placed, what you were doing. In an Ironman, how do you tactically run a race? Do you know what's going on in the race? Do you know where you're positioned? Do you know, like, what's happening?
Yeah, I think, so I have a great team and always have people out here supporting, and I rely a lot on them kind of to hear the splits and to know, because, obviously you can come out of the water and not have a clue. Until someone shouts at you where you are, or like you really get to know the people that you're racing. So you'll know the people that you come out the water with, and that can give you an indication of the kind of swim you've had. The bike, again, it is tactical. It's very much, you can have two ways. You can think, okay, I'm going to stick to my numbers. I'm going to stick to what we've worked out in training. So what's being like a run pace, or you can say, okay, I know that people are going to surge. I know that people, but I'm going to race the race. So I'm going to try and go with this pack. So it's not drafting, but obviously you still get the benefit of pacing off people and keeping that 12 meter distance back. And even just for mentality, like for your mental state, to be 5 hours on a bike, if you can ride with people around, then it definitely helps. So I'm more of that tactical mind of, all right, I'm in here, I'm in a race. Like, it might hurt me a bit more to try and go with these girls, but yeah, I'd rather give it a go and learn from it than take kind of the safe option.
And how do you keep your mind on it, like, for that period of time? Are you constantly thinking about what's going on? It's a long time to be focused.
Yeah, it is. Again, that's something that it's almost like you have to switch the mental side off, and you just have to be like, feel the body, be at one in that rhythm of the body, and you don't want to think too much. Like, you don't want to switch off as you're not concentrating, and yeah, the pace drops and everything.
Yeah.
But you don't want anything kind of fuzzy coming in. So yeah, I count to myself. I have little just things that kind of keep me alert and that keep me relaxed as well. I'll probably have about 5 cues that I just keep going over and over. So like, just check my breathing, check which muscles I'm using. I might shift my position a bit, and yeah, just all the little things that seem to just replay for round and round for 5 hours.
And how about that on the run then? So, because obviously you're knackered at that stage, how do you keep focused there? What's your tricks?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think it's always knowing that you're going to come off that bike and you're not going to feel like a runner. Like, you're going to come off the bike and you're going to even question, like, can I run 10K, let alone a marathon? And it's then getting from that state to feeling as light and rhythmical as possible in as short a space as possible.
Yeah.
So, for me, it's kind of, I try and not worry too much about pace to begin with and just try and kind of feel my way into my rhythm first of all, get my breathing back, take as much drink on as possible. Because that's what we found, that I sweat a lot. I'm a really heavy sweater. So it's actually the practicalities of, okay, how can you drink that much without it like glugging in your belly, which, it's easier on the bike than on the run. The run is more challenging.
Yeah. And how have you done that? Because I'm a heavy sweater too, and I just don't even think about that sort of thing. But how have you addressed it on the run?
So I have a really high salt concentration.
Right.
And I try and have like a little bit of something solid in there. So like, even if it's a quarter of a banana or something, you just get that potassium and it helps settle kind of the salt with the water, and then just little and often. So grabbing like a hand bottle at each aid station and just running with that. So you're taking sips rather than just throwing a cup over yourself. You're actually getting fluid on little and often.
Yeah, okay, makes sense.
And
what about the eating then? Like, obviously with that amount of time exercising, you're having to go through a lot of calories. What does your race nutrition look like? Have you got a massive great big pile of gels that you've got to smash through over the course of 8 hours?
Yeah, so I have to take on 90 grams of carb an hour. So that normally looks about, again, it depends on what we're using, but so our team sponsor VFit, their gels have 30 grams in, and the energy drink I can get up to 60 on. It would just be getting through a bottle of energy drink and a gel every hour, and then if I chuck a solid food in, again, that's probably about 40 grams of carbs, so I'll have less carb than in my drink. You've got to know where everything is, have a couple of spares just in case you drop anything. Always be looking at the timer. A lot to think about.
and in terms I didn't really ask about your training, what does a typical week look like in the lead up to this Ironman? You doing, how many hours a week are you out at their training?
Yeah, so I probably train, so Friday's my easier day, so I have a day off legs, and I will just do something like, yoga and a swim, and then the other days are around probably, 6 hours training, anything up to 8 hours, and my longest ride will be 6 hour, and my longest run for this one was 2 hours, but the block before we were doing 2.5 hours.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah. Nice. Yeah. And do you bother with the other sort of stuff, like strength work and things? Is there time to fit that stuff in?
Yeah, so I've got two gym sessions a week. so they slot in quite nicely. Like, again, we'll phase it, so in the winter it will be a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
And yeah, in a really like heavy training block, it'll be lighter, so more body weight gym.
Yeah.
Okay. So like maintenance rather than building.
Yeah. Oh, nice. And yeah. Sort of to wrap things up, where do you kind of want to go with this after you've kind of done Kona? Do you know what's next? Do you know what you'd like to do in the next few years in terms of your racing?
Yeah, I think so. I still want to, like, this is like my second proper Ironman. So,
yeah,
I feel like I have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is kind of the start out. And I just, I want to keep building on it and keep on racing a lot of half Ironmans and just feel my way through the Ironmans. And I don't really see, I think, probably peaking until like another 5 years or so.
Okay. Wow.
Seems to be the progression of it's a tough sport, and I think experience counts for a lot at this event, so I can be patient.
You're gonna have to
for the long haul.
And I've got three questions that I ask everybody as final questions, and they are: if you could be anywhere running now, where would you be?
Somewhere hot and sunny. I say back on my Spanish trails. Okay. Yeah, that signifies kind of the winter build up for us. So yeah, that's my favourite place.
Okay, lovely. And the second one is, can you recommend us something? That could be a book, film, TV show, anything you like to recommend a listener.
Yeah, I would recommend, so I was doing a lot of riding on my own recently in Spain, and I was listening to Arizona, the album. They're an American band, but they're pretty chilled and just good kind of steady run or steady ride, like feel good songs.
I would
recommend giving them a listen.
Okay, fine. And the last one is, what in your opinion is the greatest endurance performance of all time? So that could be over any endurance sport.
The greatest endurance of all time.
Yeah. But one-off performance, so it can't be a person's career. It's got to be a one-off performance.
A one-off performance. I would probably have to say, recently, I think, so Jan Frodeno won the half Ironman, beat Alistair Brownlee at the 70.3 Worlds. And yeah, that was a pretty, we were there watching. So the girls races on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And so we got to watch the men on the Sunday. And yeah, it was a phenomenal so seeing him, Alistair and Gomez, probably three of the greats of the sport, battling it out, it was pretty epic. So yeah, of the ones that I've witnessed, that would have been, I'd say that's the race.
One. Fantastic. And I should let you get off to bed, because you're it's getting late over there, and you're probably still suffering jet lags. Sorry for keeping you so long. And good luck. Hopefully
you'll have
a great run in 8 days time, and we'll be rooting for you to get up on that podium. You've got to go one better, though. After going third in Austria, this is going to be a tough task,
yeah,
isn't
no
it? From not finishing to third, it's got to be first. That's the only progression.
Exactly. It makes sense.
Nice one. Well, good luck. And hopefully catch you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, Sean.
Hey, so no outro on today's podcast, unfortunately. Technical issue. Me and Jermaine discussed his pyjamas, your reviews, some other little tidbits, but unfortunately we haven't been able to recover that. But one quick message I want to give you before we hole out of here is, we are now, the t-shirts are up and on sale. If you go to the website letsgetrunning.co.uk/shop/t-shirt, that's one word, you'll be able to see that t-shirt there, and you'll be able to buy one if you fancy it. It goes to support the show, so please help us out by getting one of those, and if you do that, that'll be fantastic. Nice one. Have a good week. See you next week. Bye.